This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Cincinnati City Council passed a law last week that imposes tougher fines on owners of dogs that bite or otherwise seriously harm someone. The new city ordinance and surrounding debate highlights the need for owners to learn how to properly train and control their dogs. And most animal experts agree, training strengthens the bond between a dog and its owner and makes for a happier relationship. We asked local certified trainers to join us to discuss the importance and value of proper dog training. With us are Dara Williams, owner of Underdog Canine Academy, Melissa Bussey, co-owner of Training Tracks, and Nick Hoff, owner of Pause, Look, Listen. Dara, Melissa, and Nick, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
And you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dara, Cincinnati passed a new law, and a lot of communities have laws dealing with dogs and their owners. So how important is it for owners to be conscientious about making sure their dogs are well-trained?
I think it's very important. It actually does increase the bond between owner and human. And there are a lot of things that we as a society don't really understand about our dogs. And a lot of the times, poor behaviors start to develop when we as humans treat dogs as humans and not understand the species as pack creatures. I think that people can definitely benefit from understanding dogs on a canine level versus treating them as humans.
Is that the kind of the idea of let dogs be dogs?
So to speak, yes, but in a human world as well.
Mel, what's your take on that?
Training's important for many reasons, and as Dara said, you know, increasing the bond with your dog is a very big outcome of training. But also, dogs' natural behavior doesn't necessarily fit into the human world. Dogs need to learn what the rules are, how to fit nicely into our world. Dogs, for example, dogs love to jump on you because they want to get close to your face to say hello. Dogs want to pee where they want to pee. And we need to teach dogs what behavior is acceptable in the human society. So that's where training comes in.
Nick, what's your take on this? How important is it for people to make sure their dogs are properly trained?
Sure. I think since you're talking to a room full of dog trainers, we're all going to
be pro on this issue.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's not just because it is literally our jobs on the line, but because it is really important. A lot of our dogs' misbehaviors that we don't like are very often dog normal behaviors that we just aren't kind of happy about having in a society where they have to interact and live with humans at all times. And so understanding that and then taking steps to help to shape our dog's behavior and help them to better understand what it is that we want to communicate to them and helping to teach that in a way that is effective for them is really important.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what does it mean to have a well-trained dog or a properly trained dog? Now, does that mean the dog has to know how to sit on command, shake my hand, the kind of things that a layman like myself thinks about when they think about dog training?
Sure. I think that it depends on who you're asking. Everyone's going to have a different take on it. For me, a well-trained dog is a dog that I enjoy having around, who behaves in a way that fits into my lifestyle, and that almost seems like I'm not really training my dog all that often because we kind of have worked out a system that works so very well for us. Some of my clients really want more precision work, and that's perfect. That's what we're going to work towards. Others are just like, I just want him not to jump on people.
Or chase squirrels or chase deer.
Exactly.
Very good.
Mel, what do you think? Did you want to weigh in on that too?
When it comes to a well-trained dog, if you're looking at it from a family perspective with the family pet, some of the really good behaviors that can be taught are obviously nice, polite greeting manners, sit for greeting, leave it and drop it are huge, especially if you've got young children in the house. They run around with the kids' Barbie. You need the dog to drop it and not, you know, eat the head off of it. Leave it and drop it are important. A well-mannered dog will walk nicely on leash, not necessarily in total heel position, but without yanking the owner's arm out of the socket. Will go to the bathroom where they need to go to the bathroom. And sit and stay are also very nice behaviors to have, especially around the door, people coming in and out the door. And obviously come is important as well. So the basic obedience behaviors, at least you know, for the basic family pet, you know, you don't necessarily need precision, but you do need reliability.
Absolutely.
Dara, what's your definition of a properly trained or a well-trained dog?
Well, just like Nick was saying, that a well-trained dog is actually an enjoyable dog to be around. You guys do have a connection between each other where there's a clear understanding between owner and dog. There is self-restraint in the dog. The dog learns the system. Every dog needs boundaries, guidelines, rules, and regulations. They definitely behave very well under structured environment. And basically, obedience training is just letting the dog know there's a time and place for everything. So when it needs to control itself, you know, it is expected to do so without such a hassle. And also there's playtime. They get to enjoy their humans, but there's also downtime. And dogs need to be respectful of that as well. So basically you're just letting a dog know there's a time and place for everything. A trained dog makes a great dog. I've never heard anybody say, oh my gosh, that's a horribly trained dog. You know, everybody loves a trained dog. They think they're so fascinating and they wish that their dog was like that when you see a great trained dog. And obviously, a trained dog is a socialized dog where you can take your dog around. It enhances the relationship with human because you can enjoy a lot of activities together. Versus an unsocialized, untrained dog where you have to put your dog up when company comes over because it's out of control, or you can't take it to certain environments because it's going to act out of accordance. So it's definitely beneficial, especially in our society now. We have so many dogs, more than we ever did. It's really important for dogs to understand their role as a pack member and who you are as the human, the owner, who is the leader, and also to help people. I train people a little bit more than I train dogs, actually.
Is that most of the battle?
Well, it is, because we as humans have preconceived notions on how to be with a dog, and we have a lot of good intentions, but sometimes the communication aspect goes a little awry. And so I teach people on how to communicate with their particular dog and help them to understand dog behavior.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And have you gone through training with your dog, and what was the experience like? Again, let us know about that. 513-419-7100. Nick, is it true that that my dog and I are going to be much, much happier if the dog gets this proper training, and why is that so?
Oh, certainly, because the foundation to proper training is allowing communication between you and your dog. Dogs don't speak English, and humans don't necessarily speak dog very well. And so figuring out how to bridge that communication gap and communicating in ways that are easy for both parties to understand is really important. So we do a combination of teaching people to better read their dog's body language and understand what their dog is trying to communicate through their actions. And then we teach the dog, hey, this is how I'm going to communicate when you're doing something that I really like and I want to see more of that. So it really helps to build a very deep, strong bond with your dog.
Have you ever seen the cartoon, Nick, where an owner is talking to the dog, obviously in English, and they're saying, blah, 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 food. The dog
yes.
hears, blah, 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 squirrel. The dog hears that. But everything else is just blah, blah, blah. That's disillusioning. I thought my dog understood every word I said.
Unfortunately, that's not usually the case. They will definitely pick up on key words, or like we call them, cues, that tell our dog important information, such as walk, are you hungry, do you need to go outside? Mm-hmm. Things along these lines our dogs understand through repetition and association, and that really helps them to understand what's important. But just like with a lot of people that we might talk to, 90% of what might be coming out of their mouth might not be exactly really helping in that situation. And so our dogs learn to tune that out. So if we can be much more decisive about what we are attempting to communicate to our dog, we can communicate that in a much clearer fashion and really help them.
Mel, is it important for me to be my dog's leader? Is because of the pack nature of the dog? Should I be the one leading the way with the dog and not the other way around?
Well, I like to think of it as being the leader. Basically, we have the opposable thumbs, the money, and the car keys. We control everything in the dog's environment. We control access to smells, access to greeting people. We control whether they go for walks, what they eat, when they eat, and we can use all of these things as rewards for the dog. Anything your dog wants in life can be a reward. Absolutely. And you can say, okay, you would like to go out, please sit. And then your reward for sitting is I open the door to let you out. So even with trainers that use a lot of food, it's not always about food. It's about a lot of life rewards. Mm-hmm. So since we control all the good stuff, we can even control access to certain special toys.
Which makes you the value system.
Right. I control the good things. And so we're going to have an understanding and a lovely mutual arrangement where you'll do what I like and then you will get what you like and we're both happy.
Is there a safety aspect to training your dog, Dara? I mean, it's good for it makes the dog's life safer, right? Makes
Absolutely.
Your life safer too, doesn't it?
Right. And it makes a stable dog. A dog, you know, understands the environment. Dogs like predictability.
Mm-hmm.
So making a predictable environment for the dog is happy about it. It knows what to expect of you, and you know what to expect of your dog, and there's no guessing games. There's structure.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And we got a comment from Ann on Facebook, and her question is about her 2-year-old Golden Doodle. And she says, I adopted him at 11 months, and she uses the R+ positive reward training exclusively, with the reward being a high-value treat. His behaviors are reasonably good, but he has a high prey instinct, and even the treats won't penetrate his taking off after a squirrel or a deer. Okay, that sounds familiar. His recall is good on a 30-foot training line, but he's not reliable enough for me to ever have him off a leash. She doesn't have a fenced-in yard, and taking him to a dog park where he'd run and play with other dogs wouldn't help with his training. So she's wondering if anybody has any suggestions for her. And Nick, what do you think?
Oh, definitely. We really like the positive reinforcement-based training methods. And beyond food, there are many other rewards. So when we have a dog who has a high prey drive, one of my favorite things to do is to focus that attention and teach the dog to listen to calming behavior such as sit or down, and then the reward can maybe be to chase a toy that's on a line. That's one of my favorite things to do with a dog is I use flirt pulls in a lot of my training to help to teach impulse control because it helps to get an outlet for that dog's behavior that we see and is really problematic, but it helps to teach the dog to focus and that you can be the access point to that, which helps to bring it much under control.
Mel?
And when it comes to coming when called, or as we like to call it, the recall, mm-hmm. It's like lifting weights. If the dog can come, you know, in your house, that's like lifting 5 pounds. But asking them to come after a running deer, that's like asking them to suddenly lift 500 pounds. You've got to gradually work in more and more distracting situations.
Right.
And when it comes to prey drive and getting a good recall off of prey, basically, it's not necessarily the treat that's going to cause the dog to come back. It's the sheer force of habit. Repetition, repetition, repetition until it is so conditioned the dog doesn't make a choice. They just respond. So it's all about lots of practice.
They forego on their instincts to follow you eventually. That's what exactly happens. I call it desensitization work where I utilize primary triggers and also secondary triggers for the dog to work around. Obviously, obedience training takes place, and then I work on the dog's self-restraint, and then I work it around its trigger. So if it's something moving, I work it within a proximity of where it can still be able to pay attention to the owner, because, again, the owner is the value system. And eventually, yes, dogs can engage with the trigger if it's safe. If it is not safe, it has to be eliminated behavior because it could cost the dog its life.
We will continue our conversation after this break, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about ideas for training your dog with local trainers Dara Williams, Melissa Bussey, and Nick Hoff. Have you ever had professional training for your dog, and what was that experience like? Join the conversation, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Ryan in Columbia Tusculum. Good afternoon, Ryan. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My girlfriend and I have a 4.5-year-old pit bull that we have had since she was about 6 months old. All told, she's probably the sweetest dog I've ever encountered. She's very, very loving, very affectionate. She doesn't have any behavioral issues. She follows instructions pretty well, does what we ask her. The only issue we have is when strangers come to our house, she's very, very skittish and standoffish. And I was wondering if the panel could comment at all about that, about ways to make her a little bit friendlier with strangers until when she realizes that they're not a threat to her.
Okay.
I think this is actually a topic that I have helped with several of my clients over the past few months, at least a dozen times. Having a dog who's a bit skittish when people come over is very common. And the main way that I help dogs who are experiencing this kind of issue is, one, we want to make sure that they feel safe. So I don't want to corner them in the room with the person. I want to give them the freedom to get out of the room if they so choose. But primarily, I want to help to change their association. So I'm going to make that person coming over the prediction for the most awesome things in the world for that dog. So when the person comes in, oh my God, it's raining hot dogs in the room. Or, oh, I get this incredibly juicy raw bone that the only time I ever get this is when guests come over. What that's going to do over some repetition is it's going to help the dog to realize, oh my goodness, every single time someone comes over, I get really good stuff. Maybe these, when people come over, it's not quite so scary. I kind of like it because it means good things are happening. Mel?
Nick's exactly right. And we do a lot of this as well. There's a lot of things that you can also do with your visitors. Visitors tend to focus on the dog and look at the dog a lot and try to hold out treats to the dog and go, come here, puppy, and get the dog to go beyond his comfort zone to come get that cookie. So the best thing that guests can do is at first to totally ignore the dog, not even make eye contact, be very mellow in their movements, not make any really sudden movements. And if they're going to toss treats to the dog, toss them to the dog or behind the dog so that the dog has a lot of space. The dog gets to gain a lot of distance. The dog gets to choose whether to approach or not. Give the dog the choice. And then as the dog gets more comfortable, you can add back in eye contact, talking to the dog, you know, and if the dog is comfortable, handing the dog some cookies. Give the dog a lot of breaks so she's not, like Nick said, trapped in the room with this person. Let her go off on her own if she needs to take a break. And generally watch the dog. If the dog's looking stressed, if the dog's looking nervous, go ahead and even if the dog hasn't chosen a break for herself, give her one on her own.
Right. And also, you want the dog to feel like it has some kind of controls in the environment, because skittish dogs are shy. They're a little bit, they take a little longer to come around. Again, Melissa was talking about eye contact and people, the energy. A dog that is shy and skittish has a heightened sense of basically a heightened sense, sorry. So you want to rest assured that a dog, but you definitely don't want to say, it's okay, in an unstable mindset. Because what it's doing is actually encouraging the dog to be that way. So you want to, again, what Melissa was saying, ignore the dog, you know, come in, even if you have to be on a side profile versus being in the front of the dog, face front, do not look at the dog. Eye contact is very, is a key for dogs. Sometimes it feels like it's confrontational. And when a dog is shy and very sensitive, it may feel that you're intimidating it. And that's not what we want of it. So again, just come in quiet. Don't pay attention to the dog. Even if you could lower yourself, like sit down, it makes a dog feel a lot more comfortable quickly as opposed to standing up around. It's, you know, like large presence, huge energy to a dog. So if you could kind of lower yourself, ignore the dog, have a cookie in the hand, and if the dog comes near you, it doesn't mean it wants you to pet it either. So just allow, yeah, because a lot of times, even dogs, even they're shy, they'll still wag their tail, but it doesn't mean that they want you to pet them. They would like to come and investigate. They really are naturally curious. So allow them to do that. But again, just try not to say, it's okay when they're feeling skittish.
And we'd like to say welcome to Day Groden, who's joining our panel of dog trainers here. Mel, you obviously know Day. So, Day, welcome.
Hi, Day.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We got a question from Adam on Facebook, and Dave will let you go ahead and lead off with the answer to this one. Can you talk about some myths that small dogs aren't dangerous? If a dog is gentle around a family, it won't necessarily hurt a stranger. What do you think of that?
I don't think that. I think it's all really based on the dog itself individually. It's not so much about the size of the dog. Certainly, our smaller dogs, you know, if they do happen to bite someone or something like that, there's less damage than a much larger dog. But that's really a myth about that, you know, just that, just because of the size, that that's going to be okay around the family or anything like that. It's really about the breed. It's about the individual temperament of the dog, because certainly there are some, you know, wonderful large, medium-sized breed dogs that do well with families, and then there are other smaller breed dogs who are just not as good around kids or family or strangers or that type of thing. So I think that everybody has to look at, you know, the actual dog itself versus just like a size or a breed.
What about the idea, Nick, that if a dog is gentle around the family, it's not going to hurt a stranger? Is that actually a myth, or is that pretty true? Can you judge your dog pretty well by how it behaves around your family?
That can certainly be an indicator to help you with that, but dogs definitely can behave very differently around their family as opposed to around strangers. I've worked with many dogs who were great around the kids, didn't even mind if the kids were running around or anything along those lines, but take them outside and a stranger comes by or walks by, and that's too much for the dog to handle. So it can be an indicator, but definitely it depends on the individual context. I see dogs who are great in the house and who aren't great outside of the house, and I see the reverse as well. So it really depends on that specific dog, but if they're good with your kids, that doesn't mean that they're going to be good with every person that they meet.
Let's talk with Connie in Mount Adams. Good afternoon, Connie. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. My question is, I adopted a dog when he was about 4 years old, so I don't know anything about his past. And my problem with him was I don't ever think that he was socialized to be around other dogs. He was fine around humans, but I tried to take him to the dog park a couple of times, and, you know, he just didn't know how to interact. He would get very tense, you know, then they would start nipping at each other, and I was wondering, you know, what can you do to help socialize a dog to be with other dogs?
Day, do you have any advice?
I think when we come into situations where we have older dogs who we have just adopted and we just don't have any history on, you know, we gotta look at the dog. It's certainly possible that in the past that your dog may have not had that proper socialization as we would like as a puppy. So typically with dogs who are older, for socialization purposes, I do kind of like what I call remedial socialization. So what I want to do is I want to make dogs feel safe first. I like to do more like what I call play dates. So that might be where I just take maybe one dog or maybe two dogs who I know are very friendly towards dogs, not going to hurt another dog, anything like that. They have very good dog communication skills. So I'll use those dogs as kind of like teacher dogs for the dog that I may need to work on with his socialization skills. That way, the dog who is worried already about other dogs, he can actually gain some positive association, and that way not feeling so worried or have this negative association towards dogs. And so typically it's a little bit more time for that dog, and you just have to go at their pace so that they're not feeling threatened or worried, but instead it's a very safe environment for that dog. And so typically it takes some repetitions of that, but I've seen dogs who were very under-socialized or really worried, and they will come out of their shells. Some of them may even actually play with the other dogs. Other times they may not play, but they're okay actually having a strange new dog there. And they're just not so worried with that. So that's how I would approach it.
Nick, what about you?
Well, one thing I think is really important for everyone to realize is that not every dog wants to be every other dog's best friend. I personally have a dog at home named Benny who really doesn't like other dogs. He can tolerate them well, but he doesn't actually want to play with them, really. And so I think that's really important to realize that it, just because you have a dog, it doesn't mean that you need to go to the dog park and socialize your dog. You might have a dog that just doesn't prefer to do that. And there is, to a certain degree, things that we can do to help with that socialization, to help kind of change our dog's feelings and help them to feel more comfortable and confident. A dog park is usually not the place to do that, though, because it can be a very overwhelming free-for-all. And so we never recommend that for a dog who we don't know their past or their history, but we do want to see if they can do a little bit better. So inviting a family, a friend's dog, or someone else to come over and see how they might do in a nice open area is a much better idea. Or working with a trainer, of course.
Tara, you wanted to weigh in on this.
Yes, I was just going to say what Nick was saying, that a dog park is definitely not the ideal place to start out with a dog that is uncomfortable around other dogs, because there are so many energies at a dog park, and you just never know what you're going to get. At the same time, this seems to be rehabilitation work for the dog, to help the dog to become comfortable and start to pick up on what is good dog communication. Group classes are really good for this kind of thing. And again, play dates with stable dogs, dogs that are dog friendly, that are some dogs that are dog friendly as well, are forceful a little bit in their meet and greet. So you want one that's really even keel, lay back. And the group training, what that does with what I do anyway, it helps a dog to become non-reactive. It helps a dog to become more relaxed around other dogs before we start really engaging with the play. And when you have successful and successive periods where the dog always comes out in a positive experience, that helps the dog with his confidence level around other dogs.
Mel, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is I want to echo what Nick said. If you're working with any kind of fear, reactivity, shyness, or aggression, you will progress much more quickly if you work with a professional, because the devil is in the details, and tiny little things you do can make all the difference. And talking about introducing dogs to other dogs, often it's best to start with a parallel walk, go on a hike Absolutely. Together, do something fun, and then gradually get them closer and closer. Again, having a trainer with you can help, because the trainer can read the dog's body language and see if this is going to be an appropriate match. And finally, touching on the dog park, I agree too, it's like clubbing. You know, when you're 21, it's a blast. So young dogs, very often, if they're very social, will love the dog park. But then even that dog who loves it when they're young, when you hit 45, you really don't want to go to the club, right? And a lot of dogs outgrow the dog park. So if your dog doesn't really seem to enjoy it, it's not abnormal, and, you know, right. Don't feel bad.
Let's talk with Marion Walton. Hi, Mary, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello,
Mary. You're on Cincinnati Edition. How are you this afternoon?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. And what's your question?
I have a question. I have a rescue dog that it was approximately 2 years old, a poodle, and he's a great dog, except I cannot extinguish the behavior. He will go after people's ankles to bite them, not in our immediate family, but if I'm on a walk with him, or if they come into our home. He will be friendly initially, but if they make a movement with their foot, he will go after their ankle, or if he feels they're threatening me in any way.
May I just ask, does he go after their ankles in front of them or behind them? What's the surrounding circumstances?
It's in front of them. If he feels the foot is coming near, and we do know that he was abused, but we don't know all the circumstances. But it's like if they're coming at him in front of him, he will just all of a sudden go at their ankles and bite at their ankle or foot.
So very similar to the issue a previous caller had about a dog being shy when people come over, one of the ways that I really like to approach this is helping to make a new pairing with the dog, seeing those feet move, those ankles move, and pairing that with something good for the dog. This often can go really nicely hand in hand with loose leash walking, especially when you're dealing with this behavior outside. I would just immediately go into my loose leash walking training with my dog, going, okay, for every step we take by that person who's walking by, you're going to get a taste tasty piece of hot dog, and it's really going to help them to really enjoy going, oh, I see that ankle moving, but I know that it's not coming after me. Instead, I know that I'm going to get something really good, and that's going to help to change that dog's association.
And you also don't want to put the dog in a position where they can practice this behavior. So obviously, this is a situation where working with a professional would be ideal. Okay. You've got a lot, it sounds like you've got some fears going on. You've got some aggressive behavior. So for example, on a walk, if you see someone coming down the sidewalk, go to the other side of the sidewalk or step off the path so that your dog can't go bite the ankle of the person walking by. Even if you have people in your home, you could have the dog on a leash so that you can keep the dog from being able to practice this behavior, and you can keep your guests safe while you are modifying the behavior of your dog. You want, and as Nick said, we do want to create a positive conditioned emotional response to strangers both in the home and out of the home, and that would be a big part of the rehabilitation of that dog.
Dave, did you have anything you wanted to add to the case of the ankle-biting beagle?
I agree with what others have said on this. Other thing that I might teach with a dog like this as well is teaching what I call an incompatible behavior. So after I've been working on conditioning a positive response to ankles and movement and that type of thing, then I might add something like, something like the dog has to focus on me rather than the people's ankles. Because that way he can't be going after someone's ankles and looking at me at the same time. So for a lot of behaviors, teaching something that they can't be doing at the same time as the behavior that we don't want, it can be really, really helpful. So that would just be something that I would add along with this specific dog's training.
Dara, I thought it was interesting you were asking about which direction.
Right, because a lot of times fair biters, they do it from behind versus in front of you. Because you're just too scared to be confrontational face to face. So they'll wait till you're not looking or wait till you have walked away from them to attack you. But also what I typically do with this type of situation, definitely obedience training is a key factor to a lot of desensitization behavior modification work, because as Day was talking, that you want the dog to start focusing on you and what you would like of the dog. So I do a lot of parallel walking, and I utilize people help out where they're walking past me. However, I work in a proximity where the dog is able to still pay attention to me versus what's happening at the distance. And then I start moving in closer and closer, and praise is so effective. I don't typically use treats in my training, but I utilize praise, especially when there is the stimulation level is great for the dog. I increase my praise. I'm like, good girl, good little buddy. Oh, that's a good here. Oh, that's a good boy. I give with the dog what it needs in order to persevere through those type of circumstances. I build on healthy pressures. Everything is in increments of stimulation. So before you know it, you're walking next to the dog or a person's walking past you and the dog is not even paying attention, because it really gravitates to what the owner, the leader, really wants of it. And dogs typically want to please their leader. So you want to work in a way that it's that the dog's sensitivity levels and then build upon its sensitivity levels, where eventually the dog is not even reactive. That's what you really want, a dog that's non-reactive.
We have to take a short break at this point, and we will continue taking your phone calls after the break, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon are local dog trainers Dara Williams, Melissa Bussey, Nick Hoff, and Day Groden. If you have any questions about training your dog, or if you've ever had an experience having your dog trained that you'd like to share, give us a call, 513. Maybe the dog trained you. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I wanted to ask, Mel brought this term up, and Dara, you mentioned it, parallel walking as a training technique. What is that?
It's when people walk either together in one direction or actually walk in opposite directions of each other, coming toward each other. It's used in dog training to help dogs to become non-reactive, well-being.
Kind of a way of desensitizing to the dog.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you just basically take a walk together, but you don't let the dogs get close enough to interact.
Absolutely.
You walk at a distance where both dogs are comfortable and then gradually decrease that distance as the dogs are showing calm and confident and happy body language.
It doesn't sound like it would be a good idea to do this on your own, though. You should probably have somebody help you with that, right?
Absolutely.
Unless you've got really, really long arms.
It's definitely a good idea to work with a professional or definitely working with another person in this. Last night, I was actually working with one of my clients on parallel walking, helping their two dogs who have been reactive towards each other, helping them to get better about being fine in the house together. And one of the ways, many ways that we're helping to address this is through parallel walking to help the dogs to be more comfortable walking alongside each other and near each other, but always with safety in place for when we're working with a dog who has any potential aggression or reactivity issues.
And this all also helps when you've got two dogs who have issues with each other. When you go on walks together, they're also getting that positive conditioned emotional response of, hey, I go for a walk with this other dog, so this other dog signals good things.
Mm-hmm. And also, pack creatures, they walk together. They roam together. So we're all walking as a pack. So,
let's talk with Allison Anderson. Good afternoon, Alice. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. I had a question about training a dog to walk on a leash in a civilized manner, so to speak.
Key words.
We have a small dog. And we took her to training when we first got her, and she's wonderful. She obeys most commands. She's great. But they wanted us to put a choke collar on her to teach her to walk on the leash, and I just couldn't do it. So I wondered if maybe there was another way to teach her to walk peacefully without doing a choke collar.
Start with Mel over here, and then Nick will get to you.
There are a number of ways you can do this. Basically, we can teach the dog that walking by our side pays off well. And so we bring a lot of really delicious treats with us, whether it's little pieces of hot dog or cheese, and we reward the dog for walking well, and we do not reward them for pulling on the leash. In other words, we do not let them to continue to go forward. Pulling on the leash is being able to move forward is a reward for the dog, and we don't want them to be rewarded for pulling. We can also, as soon as they get ahead of us or pull on the leash, we can turn around and go in the other direction. Adding rewards to this really helps it move along more quickly. And during the training process, I have found that a freedom harness, you can get them online, they're amazing. They make such a difference in the control you have over your dog because it's a front clip harness rather than a rear clip harness, although you do have that option on the freedom harness. And they just make a big difference in how much control you have over your dog while you're training.
I was actually going to mention the freedom harness as well. So when we're dealing with loose leash walking, it is by far one of the most difficult things for our dogs to understand. I often equate it, if you've ever gone for a walk with someone who's in their 80s or 90s, you have to walk really slow to keep up, to keep pace with them. I feel like that's what our dogs are having to deal with us, is we're asking them to walk a lot slower. So equipment can be a really helpful tool with this. I don't recommend the choke chain, but one of my favorite things to utilize is a freedom harness. Approximately 80% of all of my clients use it and love it. All of my dogs do as well. It's not always the right tool, though. Another great one if you have a very large dog in relation to you. I have 175-pound dogs. So I also really like a head collar, such as the Gentle Leader, that gives you control of the dog's facial, the dog's face, and allows you to have a lot of control. But the freedom harness is usually my first recommendation.
You know, Ann asked us on Facebook, what do we think about the various fads or trends like crate training, various types of halters. Are they just that fads?
I don't know if I've ever heard crate training called a fad. That's interesting. So crate training is a great way to help to house train a dog. It's one of the fastest and easiest ways to do that. So there are certainly a lot of different things in the dog world that can be fads. We have a whole variety of harnesses, leashes, collars, training treats, all kinds of tools and more. My budget is blown on that for this year already. So there's so many different things that we have. What I would recommend is speak with a trainer who can make recommendations to help you find what might be best for your dog, and also look up information online to learn more about what a specific tool or fad might be helpful for, because some of those fads definitely stick around because they are really, really good.
Dave, what do you think about various fads or trends in training?
Yeah, I'm in agreement in terms of there's definitely lots out there in terms to go through, and it can be really hard for the owner to figured out in terms of what would be the best tool for them and their dog. So definitely, you know, I would talk to a trainer about what would be the best type of thing. And I'm in agreement with Nick that certainly some of these fads, you know, they kind of, some of them come and go, but some of them certainly stay around for a while because we realize the importance of them later on. So I think that, you know, with some things you just have to kind of try them out and see what does work and what doesn't work with you and your dog.
Let's talk with Becky in Fairfield. Good afternoon, Becky. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. I have a question. I have a 16-week-old Airedale, and she's doing pretty good. I know she's really young, and they do all those fun puppy things, but I'm having problems with her biting. I kind of call it psycho fits because she will be fine. She will be playing or sitting by me, and all of a sudden she just starts with this biting. Out of nowhere. And for instance, the other night we were sitting on the couch and I was just kind of petting her and she was chewing on a like a chewy. And I get up and I'm walking, and I mean, I heard her and she just came up behind me and like jumped up and bit the back of my pajama pants and actually ripped, you know, three little holes in them with her teeth.
Mel, you're shaking your head a lot and saying, I've heard this before.
Puppies need a lot of naps. Basically, one of the first things to ask yourself is start charting when this happens. In a lot of cases, the dog has been up and active for 2 to 3 hours. And dogs, even adult dogs, sleep a lot. Puppies sleep even more. If you've ever raised a toddler or know anyone who has, when they are past their nap time, they are sometimes difficult to deal with, and puppies are exactly the same. So one of the first things we like to look at is how long has it been since the dog has laid down and taken a nap? And if they've been up and going, and haven't laid down and fallen asleep on their own, we often will recommend that every 3 hours or so the puppy go up for a nap with a nice stuffed Kong or some kind of chew in their crate. So that's where we like to start with that. But I'm sure Nick will have some more suggestions as well, Dara as well.
Yes. Sorry. You definitely want to start creating boundaries with your puppy. At the age of 16 weeks, your dogs actually start thinking like adults, even though they are in puppy bodies. So they're more calculative, more purposeful in their actions. So that's something to be mindful of as well. I would definitely not... if the dog is biting you or something that is on you, I would not redirect it with a toy or something it can chew on, because that is actually rewarding their behavior. So there are certain things that I do in puppy development that I help to eliminate the play biting. And you definitely want to eliminate it early on and not just look at it as puppiness, because I've seen a lot of times where it is not eliminated and it turns into protest biting, where they see you as a litter mate as well. So I kind of take it a little bit more seriously.
Certainly, biting is definitely a very, very serious issue, especially with puppies. They have very, very sharp needle teeth that hurt like the dickens. When we're dealing with a dog, when we're dealing with a puppy who's biting, the way I like to approach this is we want to definitely get that biting under control ASAP, mm-hmm. but we want to do it in a graduated manner. If we just teach our dog not to bite altogether right away, we'll get rid of that biting, but we don't teach the dog bite inhibition, which is a very, very important aspect. One of my dogs, he has bitten people before I adopted him. He bit around 20 people. And thankfully, he wasn't euthanized because he had good bite inhibition. When he bit, it didn't cause anyone to be injured. And this is really, really important. During the puppy's early socialization periods, we can teach them to bite softly, and more softly until they don't bite at all, which we definitely want to get under control ASAP, but we do want to teach them to bite softer before we just get rid of it, so that when they, if they ever did bite as an adult, they'll hopefully not do any damage. And that makes a humongous difference in the outcome of a dog, whether they have done damage when they've bit or not. So we definitely want to treat it seriously, but we want to get it under control ASAP.
Let's talk with Ben in Westchester. Good afternoon, Ben. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you for taking my call. My family has a almost 11-year-old Newfoundland, and you guys may have answered this already before, but I was wanting to find out whenever I'm playing with him, like we'll go out, we'll run, I'll take him on walks, things like that. It used to be years ago he would play fetch, but it seems like either he's just lost interest in it, or doesn't do that anymore. Are there any ways that I can, do other activities or try to train him how to fetch to, keep him active? Or is it just because maybe he's gotten too old and, his body's just slowing down?
Day, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, definitely, I do certainly look at the dog physically. I think that that's important, because sometimes we find that dogs who aren't fetching anymore, who once did fetch or maybe play tug and they're not doing that anymore, I always look at issues like surrounding the mouth, if that's the case, because sometimes we find that a dog actually has, they hurt a tooth or it's cracked or something like that. So that's always the number one thing I want to look at, is just in terms of physically and medically with the dog. Then what I look at with a dog is I look at how do I motivate the dog in terms of wanting to play fetch or tug or whatever it is. And I'm going to work towards that. So I'm going to make it a game, make it really exciting for him again. It certainly could be in the case of your Newfoundland, because he is 11, and that's an absolutely wonderful age for a Newfoundland, by the way. Fetch and tug aren't certainly the only things that we can teach and keep our dogs active, even at an older age. So some of our dogs who, when they are a little bit older, I might do things like having them actually find a scent. There's a new sport out called nose work that's become very popular, that pretty much any age dog can do. And that way I'm training them to find a specific scent, and when they do, then I can reward them for it. The nice thing about nose work is that it is a pretty low impact activity, but at the same time, I'm still really mentally stimulating my dog. So that could definitely be one activity that you could do with the Newfoundland, if you're finding that fetch and tug may be a little bit harder on his body than it used to be when he was younger. So that might be one suggestion. Certainly there's other activities that you could do with your dog as well, like swimming when it's warmer outside, obviously. Many Newfoundlands do like to swim, so that could be another suggestion. Certainly just good walks in general. That's another way just to keep them active, even in older age. So those would be definitely some alternatives I would look at besides looking at fetch and tug.
We've got time for one more phone call. Let's talk with Bob in Madeira. Bob, what's your question?
Hi, we've got about a 5-year-old Esky Husky mix. She's a rescue. Don't know what her history is, but we were told that she came from a little old lady's home. She acts aggressively toward other dogs at the end of the leash, but yet when we take her to the dog park and let her off, she is perfectly cool. I kind of don't know how to get my head around this.
Okay, let's let Nick
and aggressively even to other dogs that she's been introduced to before.
Guys, we've got about 30 seconds, so the advice for Bob has got to be pretty quick here.
Sure. That's a very common issue. Dogs behave differently on leash than off leash. What you want to do is work with a trainer who can specifically work with you with your dog on leash to help to address this. Since your dog is doing well off leash, that means that getting them good on leash will definitely be something that we should be able to do and do quickly, hopefully.
Mel, did you want to add in?
I think what Nick said is absolutely right. Work with a trainer, and they can help you change your dog's response to seeing other dogs on leash, and it should not be that difficult given that your dog obviously actually likes other dogs. It's more of a frustration thing being on a leash and not having complete autonomy.
And the whole pulling aspect of the dog on the leash as well, you want to definitely not allow your dog to pull on a leash. So the trainer
is absolutely
going to help you.
Loose leash walking.
Yes.
Yes.
Dara, Melissa, Nick, and Day, thanks so much for talking with us today. Dara Williams, owner of Underdog Canine Academy, Melissa Bussey, co-owner of Training Tracks, Nick Hoff, owner of Paws, Look, Listen, and Day Gordon with Dog Abilities. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on 91.7 WVXU.